Thanks for coming to this great panel that we have, Art and Advertising, Two Sides of the One Sheet. My name is Roger Eric Tinch. I curate and run a site where, you know, I basically cover sort of the idea of the fine art of film art, as I like to call it. We'll be looking at some big philosophical ideas about, you know, art and advertising, how they're entwined, how they're not, as well as kind of go into some of the favorite pieces of these designers and kind of get a sort of background look at the process. So let's begin introductions. We'll start with Justin Ishmael.
Yeah, my name is Justin Ishmael. I run a company called Mondo here in Austin, Texas. thank you. We do limited edition screen printed posters for films, and it kind of started, I would say, 4 or 5 years ago with the Alamo Drafthouse. We would do it kind of took the gig poster mentality, where if you go to like a band, you see a band in each different city, there is a poster for that city in that show. We kind of took that idea and applied it to movie posters, and it kind of expanded into us working with studios on an official capacity to not only, you know, do stuff for like Back to the Future, repertory movies, but do stuff for, you know, larger movies, like we're doing, you know, promoting Iron Man 2 or Thor or Captain America. So that's kind of what we've been doing the last couple of years.
Akiko?
I'm Akiko Sternberger. My website's Akikomatic. I'm a freelance illustrator and art director, and I actually work for multiple movie poster advertising agencies, and they just hire me for certain projects, and they work for movie studios. So my background has been illustration, and anytime I have the chance, I'm trying to illustrate a poster. So a lot of times it gets thrown in the trash, but for the most part, I keep trying, and eventually one of them sticks. So that's
great.
Why I'm here.
Thanks, Kiko. And Sam?
I'm Sam Smith, and I'm an artist and illustrator from Nashville, and I've done screen prints for the Belcourt Theater in Nashville, some theatrical posters, and DVD covers.
Cool. Justin?
My name is Justin Erickson, creative director of Phantom City Creative from Toronto. We do a lot of illustration design for film, TV, and music. Lucky enough to work with Mondo guys a lot. They're awesome to work with, you know, some indie films and so on and so forth.
Cool. Thank you. And since we have two Justins, Justin Ishmael agreed to be called Mr. Mondo during this panel, so just so we can differentiate the two. So, you know, let's just jump into like the big question right off the bat, and you know, what makes a poster, you know, a piece of art or just an advertisement? Mr. Mondo, he actually opened up a gallery on Saturday on 4115 Guadalupe Street. So you obviously, you know, think of movie posters as art. Is it as clear cut as that?
Yeah, I mean, I think any kind of advertising can be, you know, it can be art, it can be tasteful. I think it's pretty clear when you look at a poster, when they're selling that to like when we do it, there's three people. There's me, Rob Jones, Mitch Putnam, and we look at these posters and we work with the artist and we say, we like this, or we don't like this. And when the studio comes back to us and says, change this, we will fight it if we don't agree with it. Sometimes, we, you know, we're not assholes all the time and be like, no way, we're not doing this. But we really have strong feelings about why this will work. And it's not, we're not sending it to, you know, a room full of people to get their opinion and, you know, check numbers and percentages and, you know, all this stuff. And that's, I think that's a lot of times when you're looking at, like, the Anna Faris comedy. I mean, clearly, like, they're looking at, like, how can we get, like, this age group and this demographic? And that's, I think that's what's really kind of, like, messing with stuff is, you know, the group mind think thing. Like, you're going to get, you know, there's probably a good idea in that, and there's a shitty idea, and you're going to get, like, the worst one, which is the boring middle ground, so everyone's happy in that room, so no one's mad at each other. And that's, like, that's the worst thing. That's when it becomes advertisement, I think. And when you have, like, a strong vision on something, someone is very specific about what they want, that can be more of the art of it, you know? Like, I don't know. There's a lot of work that goes in these, and we were talking earlier, you know, like, where you're doing all this amazing stuff, and there's like, well, we don't want to show that because they'll really like it. And it's like, why would you want to, like, have the half-assed version out there? So
yeah, Kiko, can you tell the audience the story that we had talked about earlier?
I guess one of the projects I worked on was Where the Wild Things Are, and of course I was extremely excited to work on it. I grew up with the books, love Spike Jonze, and because you know, a huge movie studio was putting it out, they were having a hard time finding footing on what kind of a movie to sell. And, you know, we had presented some incredibly beautiful designs, and they had actually, the movie studio actually told us not to show Spike Jonze because he might actually like them. And that was just definitely heartbreaking. And in the end, it, you know, the main poster, one of my great friends did, the teaser poster, it came out great, but compared to all the other work that we had shown, we definitely had more groundbreaking work that never saw the light of day just because they wanted it to be marketed to everybody. And in the end, they couldn't really find a strong voice for it, and then nobody ended up seeing it, which was really, really devastating.
Sam, Justin? How do you guys feel about posters as a piece of art or an advertisement? What's the, if there is any sort of delineation?
I just want to mimic what they said. When you have 15 marketing people dictating a poster, no one likes it, and it shows.
Yeah, and a lot of times these studios, if it's a big movie, you know, they don't have a plan together. They're fighting over it while you're in your room trying to come up with something interesting and eye-catching, and they don't even know what they're looking for. And it's a lot like the music industry where the people in the offices, they really are kind of scatterbrained and don't really know what they want to begin with, or like Where the Wild Things Are, how to even market the movie in general. And I think it's just an interesting... It's a time right now where everything, there are no rules. Like everything is all the old rules really don't apply anymore, because when you're talking about theatrical posters, I mean, the only time you even see a theatrical poster in the flesh is if you're in the hall of a multiplex. A lot of people aren't even going to the multiplex anymore. A lot of people are seeing these posters just as a image on their internet browser that's about this big. So I think the important thing is to try to just focus on creating art that's eye-catching. And I think, be it a big Hollywood movie or a small, you know, a screen print for a smaller audience, you just need to find something that people respond to. And it can be a big Photoshop piece for a big movie, or something small and more interesting.
Do you feel the need to sell something in the art as sort of devaluing the art?
Sell something in the art?
Yeah, so you're basically selling a movie. You know, you're selling, I mean, in essence, a product. Do you feel that sort of devalues the art, the, you know, poster as an art in any way?
No, because you want to promote the film. I mean, I think when you work on any project, you want to try to promote it. Sometimes you work on a movie that maybe you don't like, but, I mean, it's still the right thing to do to try to do right by the movie and allow people to see it who might be interested in it. Mm-hmm. The problem is, a lot of times the studio doesn't understand what the audience for the movie would want to see. You know, and they have another idea of what people are looking for.
How many times have you been given a job and you say, okay, what are you looking for? And they go, we want something epic. Yeah. Or have you get that shit a lot? Yeah. Like, we want something, just do something cool. And it's like the most vague, general bullshit in the world. And then you get it, then you go and do something like, oh, we don't want that. Yeah, it's like, what do you want? And we were talking about this earlier too. We get the Walmart term a lot, where they're like, we need Walmart. Like, we need something that could go into Walmart, something like that. And you're like, why would you do that? You know, like,
especially the home video market. We Walmart is their biggest market still, and they want to market to the lowest common denominator, so everyone likes a piece. But when you market, we make something where everyone's gonna like it, no one's gonna like it.
It shouldn't. I mean, like, a poster should be something that is like, it makes you ask a question. Yeah. You see something, you're like, "What is that?" Or, yeah, "I got to figure out what this is." I remember in the 80s and maybe even like early 90s, you would really like, you would see a poster and like, I want that. You know, like, I want to collect that poster. And like, a lot of the stuff from the era is like very valuable. It's in the poster collecting community. And then now, I can't think of hardly anything I would see. And I work for the Alamo Drafthouse, and I could probably go up to the projection booth and grab that poster. I have never done it because it's like, there's not very much stuff out there that's like, I got to have that. And one would think that like it's oversaturated, or it's just kind of like, you know, it's become throwaway with the internet. But I really do think it, like with the like the moon poster. Like the moon poster was one of the ones I looked at in the theater and like stopped me. And it was like, it was, I mean, if you really think about it, it was Sam Rockwell as an astronaut with rings around it. And it said moon. I was like, I have to see that movie because just something about it, I had to figure out, I had to see what it was. And a lot of stuff with like a giant Harrison Ford head, you're like, what? I mean, I know what that movie is going to be like. And like, I don't want to see it.
Yeah. So. And you find some studios with theatrical posters are willing to do something more interesting and some aren't. And you know that pretty quickly when you start working with them. You know, and then the ones that spend so much time trying to figure out that formula of how to market something to everybody, you just wonder, like, why are they putting so much stressful thought into this? Because, you know, at the end of the day, you just need to make something eye-catching that people are going to love, and they just
entice them.
It's always overthought.
Well, what they do too is, I'm sorry.
Go on.
Okay, I think what they do, they tend to blame the economy, and they use that as an excuse to not be willing to take more chances. You know, they want to make sure that somebody in middle America understands exactly what they're seeing. So, you know, for instance, a cup of water for a poster won't intrigue them. So I think that's where a lot of the watering down has happened, you know, especially in the last few years, where they want to make sure that theaters feel filled no matter what. So, you know, anything eye-catching or risky or, you know, cutting edge might scare away somebody that would be part of their focus group or something. Mm-hmm. You know, like we've had focus groups say that they're scared of the color red and had to throw everything out that was red. It's ridiculous what happens in that stage. Mm-hmm.
Justin, my favorite, going back to what Justin said about being epic, my favorite is when you get two vastly conflicting ideas from a client. What do you want? I want epic, but small.
Yeah.
You know, action-y, but quiet. So what do you want? Ask again.
Yeah. I, you know, Sam, just kind of going off of what you'd mentioned as far as, like, it's, there's, like, this new, you know, like, no rules, you know, it's sort of a new era, I guess, in movie poster design. You know, it kind of brings us the idea of the new wave and, you know, how you have, you know, people, like, besides yourself, like Gallery 1988, Neil Kellerhaus, Mark Carroll, doing some really, really amazing work when it comes to movie poster design. Do any of you guys ever think about, like, how this new wave started, where it came from?
I think it maybe as a result of the last 20 years of film posters has been so god-awful. And we're all at the age that we remember when posters, you know, back in my day, when posters were really good and they were art and they were enticing and challenging. And posters have been lacking that for so long that people just kind of want to take it back themselves, you know?
Yeah, and again, just like certain companies are more, have that share that attitude with us. Mondo, of course, being like the extreme example of like of that. That's their number one priority is coming up with something aesthetically interesting and cool. And you know, like sometimes a director like the Soderbergh, you know, he's figured it out so that he can have some control over his posters, and he has Kellerhaus do his posters and things like that. And just some companies get it and some don't.
Well, Mr. Mondo, I would think that, you know, there's a feeling, at least for me, that a lot of sort of this new renaissance in film poster design has kind of started with Mondo, at least as far as the resurgence, you know, starting with 2005, you know, when Rob started doing the gig posters, and then
right. You
coming in 2009. Do you ever think about maybe perhaps Mondo had a lot to do with this?
I mean, I would, you know, it's, I would yeah.
Don't be humble.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's kind of this thing where I don't know if a lot of people know this, but we've been doing research, and like theaters used to do what we do. Like theaters used to make their own, like regional theaters. Like you'll go back. I mean, I got an email from this auction house recently, and they found this giant block of posters, and back then no one cared. It's kind of like in, you know, like when Marvel started their comic book stuff, like no one knew that these things were going to be valuable, so it was just kind of like you read them and you throw them away and it's done. But they found this giant brick, and they were all original posters that this theater had done, and the brick was all of the posters squished together, because, you know, like something would, you know, like Bridge on the River Kwai would come, and then it would make a poster for that, and this other one would come, and they would slap it over, and so they separated all these posters, and this theater had done all these amazing things, and a lot of theaters did that. And I just imagine that it's like, you know, there used to be mom and pop hardware stores, and they do like their own thing because it was unique. And then like Home Depot came in and just started buying and shutting them all down, so it became this one thing. I think that's probably what happened with theaters, is there was all these different theaters, and then they started dying because of VHS came in, or this came in, and this came in, and that kind of stopped. And I have no idea if that people liked that or if that was even a thing, but that's kind of my thinking with it, is that it's kind of like that has came back with Gallery 1988 and us and all these different people. It's kind of like those theaters are back in a different way, doing their own, putting their own spin on it. It's just something else from the normal studio-fed advertising stuff, where, you know, it's kind of almost like the fans are taking over with what they want to see. Mm-hmm. And then they're reacting to that, because a lot of people, you know, there's overwhelming, you know, like negativity to a lot of the stuff that comes out. And then when, you know, we do something, or like, you know, Sam does something, or you do something, like the Funny Games we were just talking about, like that was like voted like in the room or like the number one poster of that year. So I think it's maybe it's like it's evident that people care now, where it was just how much money can we get based off of this one piece of paper in the theater, you know? So I would hope that that's what's happening now, is mm-hmm. people are, you know, taking note that people care about this stuff, and it's definitely. It's not just a dollar figure. You guys just aren't like green pieces of paper walking around. So.
Yeah, you know, for me, a lot of the sort of the interesting work that's coming out of this sort of new wave is really the you know, the aesthetics, as far as how you guys creatively, you know, interpret a lot of these movies. You know, how would you guys define your style? Or do you have a style? I guess we can start with you, Justin.
I try to let the movie speak to the style. You can't really do how do you pour this? The movie, when you're doing a movie piece of artwork, the movie has to dictate what you do with it. Like, you can't force your own, like, what you think. It's a tough one.
Sometimes you can.
Yeah, like, I just think that the movie should give you the direction.
Sure, sure. I mean, Akiko, you definitely have, I would say, you know, very painterly aesthetic. When you're working with studios, how do you inject that into sort of the conversation about the design? Is that something that you start with, or what, you know, how do you work with the studios and not losing sort of your style?
Well, I think what's been interesting is trying to adapt it to the specific genre of movie. I mean, I obviously know a painting isn't going to work for a Julia Roberts movie, so I try to save it for those that I feel could allow for it. I think just in general, I like to work more on independent art house films, because that just lends itself to something more creative. Mm-hmm. But I think as a whole, you know, I just try to really figure out if that genre will somehow allow for it, and then run with it.
Have you ever went to a studio and said, I want to do this painted poster, and they've been like, no?
It's actually interesting. Life During Wartime, I was really excited to work on it, especially Todd Salon, especially with Happiness being illustrated. And you know, the first round we worked on it, they're like, okay, great, now we don't want anything illustrated. And it felt like a punch to the gut.
Mm. Did they give you a reason why?
Maybe because of Happiness.
Yeah.
You know, but we couldn't quite figure it out. And then in the end, it ended up being my illustration, because there were some issues with rights with the photography. But, you know, for the most part, any chance I get, if there's any small window for something illustrated, I'm going to try to do it, definitely, and hope that it eventually gets somewhere. And if not, you know, I've gotten used to things being just thrown away.
Yeah.
I've just kind of told myself that it's going to be something for me and something I put on my site, mm-hmm. and hopefully, you know, people like it.
We've heard the reasoning, like the illustration posters, is people think it's old. Like, and they don't like old. That's like a lot of like 80s movies. They'll have like an illustrated poster, like, and then they'll go back and do like Near Dark, right? Like Near Dark had some amazing posters, and then they went back and like did the whole like the Twilight thing to make it look like a sexy vampire movie. They did this whole new thing. And it was crazy to me.
It's really weird, especially because they're like book covers. If you walk into a bookstore, if you can find one, like you go to the new, there's a lot of illustration going on book covers for popular books. You know, but with movies, like how I approach it with a movie poster is, I feel like I have kind of a stylistic identity crisis. I don't know if I even know what my style is, but I'll usually ask, like, do you want something that looks like the film or something that looks different, that can look different?
Why do you think studios don't follow like the Criterion trend? You know what I mean? Because like Criterion's well, like widely regarded as like the best in the packaging. I mean, you do a lot of them, you know, and like, and they're not, you know, like it's not like a photo. You know what I mean? And it's, right. Why do you think that they don't look at you guys and be like, oh, they're like they're the best? Like, why don't we go with that?
I think some of them try to, and then sometimes they just have the other corporate pressures, you know, or pressures within the studio to do other things. But, you know, a lot of times when I ask them that question, can I do something traditional or something different? They'll be like, give me one of each, you know, like, so I try to sometimes do something that's photographic based and try to come up with something as cool as I can using the materials that they've given me, and then I'll also show them something different because I try to, like you said, try to, if I can, come up with the most abstract and graphic thing possible, and then if they have to water it down from there, so be it, but try to give them both ends of the spectrum, and a lot of times they'll go with the more interesting thing because they're like, oh, that's more eye-catching. Yeah.
And how does Criterion choose their artists? Is there a pitching process, or it's something where they come to you and say you would be great for this?
I don't really know. I just know my experience, which was just kind of organically came out of me doing posters in Nashville. The Belcourt was working with Janus Films, and Janus Films and Criterion are a pair. And I think they, you know, like I was in their office and like last year, and they're like, "Do you know this guy Ali Moss?" I was like, "Yeah." They're like, "We saw this online, The Great Dictator." Like, that's really, that was cool. That would be a cool cover. I was like, "Yeah, go for it." So I think it's just, you know, they have a nice art department there, and they see stuff that they like, and they try to get in touch with. They used Akiko's theatrical poster for Life During Wartime. You know, I just think they just have good taste.
Do all of you have that opportunity to, and I know Mr. Mondo does basically pick all the projects he wants to work on, but do most of you guys have that ability to sort of pick the projects that you work on? Because I think that's sort of another defining factor in your work, that you're not doing, you know, posters for summer blockbusters and you know, that kind of stuff. You know, specifically at Kiko, I guess, you know, you sort of tend to concentrate on sort of smaller studio films. Is that like a choice, and do you turn down, you know, films that don't fit?
Well, I put on my site only the kind of work that I want to do. I mean, I do work on a big spectrum of work. I've worked on Harry Potter's and stuff like that. But the last thing I want is people to fall back on that and start hiring me for that. I mean, there are times when a movie poster agency hires me for a big chunk of time, and I don't have a choice. I have to work on whatever's given to me. But the only thing I can do is just try to produce the best work given the different type of project. You know, I don't just completely shun something because it's not art house, but I try to at least just try to make things clean. I think what's really lacking in movie posters in general is just simplicity and cleanliness. And so even if I'm working on a broad, like, comedy, I try to bring some of that in because it really is lacking. So I'm just, you know, depending on the genre, I always want to feel like I'm bringing some type of sophistication to it, even if it's not the specific project that I love to do. But, you know, aside from that, I do enjoy challenging myself. You know, it is more of a challenge to do mainstream stuff and be happy with what I work on, and versus just painting for everything. So.
And then, you know, Justin, you do a lot of work, you know, with Mondo. Mm-hmm. How did those projects come about? What's that process like, I guess?
I got in touch with these guys when I was doing a series back to the 80s for Tiff and Todd Brown at Twitch Film. And after a few released, Mitch got a hold of me and says, "Would you be interested in the poster?" And I said, "Yes." And then that's it.
Was that intentional? You know, that those TIFF posters were sort of the big splash for you. Was that sort of the goal and the idea behind doing those?
Well, it's definitely inspired by Mondo and this new wave of posters. And I love doing posters in the first place, so I thought this was a good outlet. And I always thought I'd love to do Mondo stuff, but it wasn't like the intention. I just want to make good posters.
Have you ever turned down a movie that you're asked to do? Yeah.
If it doesn't fit or the time's not right, because the worst thing is getting overloaded with too much stuff, because then the work you're doing all over will be bad. Or the movie's not a fit, or the client, you know, is difficult. But sometimes it's hard to turn things down. If times are lean, you just have to bite the bullet and just try to, you know, make it good.
With picking projects, I am a firm believer in just shooting for the moon and asking for what you want. I've emailed art departments for a movie I know is coming out in like a year and be like, I want to do that. Keep me in mind. And a lot of times it works out because a lot of these people have, you know, and it's like artists coming to Justin with Mondo, mm-hmm. you know, it makes it easier for you if you have an artist coming to you that's passionate about a certain project. You're like, great, let's do it. And, you know, sometimes with Criterion, for example, like they have so many titles that they have the rights to and nowhere near enough time to put them all out. But if an artist, if I express interest in something, they'll be like, all right, let's put it on the front burner because we have someone who wants to do that. And with theatrical posters, a lot of times they just have a calendar and they have slots and they're just trying to fill them. So, it, you know, I'm a firm believer of just like asking for what you want and mm-hmm. trying to dictate your portfolio that way.
Very cool. And you know, we were sort of talking about the you know, artistic side of that work. And, you know, now we're going to get more into working with the studios where that art and that line of it becoming an advertisement starts to bleed over. Mondo, you know, did a pretty big series with Lucasfilm for, you know, your Star Wars series. What was that experience like?
That was one of the hardest ones. And that was one we actively like went after. And that was pretty early on in like getting the licensing stuff. Usually when, you know, we do a project, it's we'll send a JPEG and they will approve it off the JPEG, but they wanted physical samples first, and they, you know, it took a month at least if there's no changes for, you know, every poster, and we only had a year to do it. So it was rough. I mean, it's different with every studio. Some are like, we don't have any paperwork with, you know, we never signed a contract, and some are like super papered, and, you know, it's.
But that was definitely like probably the biggest license for you guys at that point.
Yeah, I mean, we have Disney now, and that's pretty large too. That's like that same level, you know. But yeah,
and you know, a really really important question to ask when it comes to doing a Star Wars series is how did you talk yourself out of having to do any of the prequels?
Oh, it's easy. We just don't like them.
how did Lucas take that?
They didn't. You know, we're so small to them. They don't care. You know, I mean, and what the money we were making for them was probably nothing compared to what they do off of like toys or, you know, like fast food tie-ins or something like. I think it's
ironic because meanwhile, like the posters you've done for Star Wars are becoming more iconic than anything they've done with merchandising in the past.
Yeah,
like,
man, like I was so bummed when the Phantom Menace poster came out. You know, it's like called Akiko. You know,
or
like,
the episode three like, teaser poster.
Seriously, like do something. Like
especially new ones.
You have this entire world to play with, and then you do that. And it's just like it was so sad. You know, it's like man, and no one liked it. No one was like, oh shit, that's crazy. You know, it's just like. They just had one of the things from ever, you know, like, here's Darth Maul and here's Yoda, you know, and it's like, come on, man. Like, you can do something. You have all this shit to play with, and there's a billion people out there. There's so many people we know that would just, like, kill that, and they would work for nothing. With Star Wars money, like, you could get this, yeah, I don't know. It's frustrating.
You know, speaking of, you know, working with studios, Akiko, you've probably out of this whole group have been working with studios the longest, 2004,
yeah.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen a shift, I guess, in that amount of time that you've been doing that work? Are they starting to sort of embrace this new wave?
Well, kind of going back to what you were talking about, I think Mondo had a lot to do with it because, you know, it's popping up in, like, print magazine, a lot of fans of Mondo, and I think clients, unfortunately, are the last to kind of pick up on trends, so they're still kind of in the Shepherd Fairey trend, which... If I have to hear that name one more time, I'm going to shoot myself. But it's, you know, it's taking a while for them to stick. But once they see all the attention that you guys have been bringing to us, they know that, kind of what he said, people are craving more art. They're craving posters that people want to hang on their walls again instead of just big Photoshop montages.
I mean, we're really beating up on studios, but, like, to their defense, you know, like, I mean, just think about what they are doing. You know, you're spending $500 million on something like Avatar. And, I mean, do you really want to roll the dice on that? You know, I mean, you have so much invested in it to have it, you know, Cutthroat Island on you. Like, that would be, like, the worst possible thing. Maybe it's, like, lose all that money on that. So, I mean, it's... I think a lot of us, if we were in that position and we had, like, that much money invested, it'd be tough to, you know, be like, call Mondo for this poster. You know what I mean? Like, why go against what's worked for you in the past? But, I mean... Give them credit because they are letting us do stuff. You know, they are letting us do what we want to do with these posters. And it's, I mean, just go from us just doing it from the Alamo and now us doing it for, like, you know, official programs with studios. I mean, it's came a long way in the 4 years. And look, I mean, hopefully in another 4 years, we can be up to the point where we're actually doing theatrical one sheets. So, I mean, it's not all doom and gloom, you know, I don't want to.
Yeah, and also, you know, like, you see a lot of studios. We'll make this theatrical poster for the masses, but we're going to do this alternate cool screen print too. And some of them are trying things like that, like with Black Swan.
You know, Chronicle did that whole thing, you know, where they did the poster and then they had like that entire blog where like fan art, they could just upload it to their Tumblr or something, you know, and that was a cool idea.
Cool. What's the, you know, in doing studio work, what has been sort of, you know, for each of you, the hardest project creatively? You know, go a little bit into, you know, sort of the backroom, you know, politics or the, you know, the billing blocks, that sort of stuff that tends to, you know, kind of ruin good, I guess, movie poster design. Excellent.
I just had that actually, doing a DVD cover package for Exit Humanity. It's like a zombie film out of Canada. And we're doing we're going to do the package design for US and Canada. And that was the first red flag we should have known, because if you're getting two distributors involved, it's two different opinions a lot. So it being a really serious Civil War era movie with zombies in it, we tried to stay away from a lot of the iconic zombie stuff just to be more true to the movie. Like, we love the movie, love the guys who made it. Just try to do something good by the movie. So we sent them all these ideas we thought were good. The director loved them, but the studio hated them. Like, from top to bottom, they hated them. But the worst part was we got two conflicting feedback from both studios, both America and Canada. We got, from one end, we want more zombies and more action. I'm like, oh, great. And from the other side, we want no zombies at all and no action. Again, it's that you get both ends of the spectrum of feedback. So it's really hard to work with that sometimes, but it's not always bad. That's the worst example I could think of. And in the end, we were removed from the project, unfortunately. But for most, it's been pretty good. Like, we wouldn't have many horror stories. Like, any kind of job, there's good and bad days and good and bad clients. But it's always just stick up for what you believe in. If you like have an idea you think is really, really good, just if they don't like it, you know, just try and talk them into it or explain your idea, your direction. And most of the times, they're pretty reasonable people.
I don't have a lot of horror stories, so I can maybe pass it to Akiko for her James Bond experience.
Please.
One project I was working on with my boyfriend, actually, was the 60-year anniversary for James Bond, and they wanted to put out a series of DVDs. And they'd contacted us and said they wanted something that was kind of a throwback to the Bob Peak era when, like, James Bond posters were just gorgeous. And we thought the whole reason why they approached us was because I'd be able to do this. So what happened is that I ended up sending them a bunch of sketches of each James Bond full-bodied. They approved them, and I spent weeks and weeks on end hunched over my easel painting these guys. And then we had them put into these comps, printed beautifully, sent over to England, and next thing we knew, they're like, these are great, but can you now try doing all these Bonds, but like in a Shepherd Fairey style? And that's at the point where I'm like, all right, sorry, we're pulling out of this. Like, that was just heartbreaking. You know, not only did I lose a lot of money, that wasn't the point. It was what it could have been, and the whole intention of why I thought they contacted us just got thrown in the trash. And at that point, we decided that it'd probably be better if they went with like an agency that could do that, because at the end of the day, it would have been cool to say that we did the 60-year anniversary for James Bond, but not at that level of compromise. So I think that was definitely one of the hardest projects.
And Justin, I don't know if we've already covered it, but what would be sort of the hardest, you know, creatively working with a studio and an artist and producing a piece?
The hardest one by far was Studio Ghibli. I mean, it's, you know, it's nothing negative to them, but it's just like that's their thing, and they still control every part of that, you know. And they were very hesitant to even let us do anything at all because they don't license to the U.S. at all. There's a funny story with it. I heard the reason was because you know, like the Totoro, the big, like, you know, the gray guy, the big, like, he's like, he would make a great plush toy, right? And they have those in Japan, and they have really hard whiskers. They're almost like metal. And so they will hurt a child, you know, like they'll hurt a kid. And so this American toy company came over and we're like, all right, we want to do all these Totoro plushes. First things got to go are the whiskers. We can't have like a kid getting his eye poked out. And they're like, get out. And they're like, that was it. Like, they're like, we're not going to have the American soften everything. And so, and actually one of the things they mentioned was Star Wars. They're like, we don't want to get Star Wars'd. And so we had to, they've only let Pixar like reinterpret their characters ever. And so we came in and had Martin Anson do a poster. And it was this crazy, all the Ghibli characters were waiting at an airport. And they were going to, like the sign said, now boarding for New York, because they're going to have the retrospective for Start New York. And they came back and were like, absolutely not. Like, this is disrespectful to our characters. And we're like, we had no intent on disrespecting the characters, but there's like, our characters would never wait in an airport. They wouldn't wait for a plane. And so we're like, okay, sorry. it's just stuff like that where, you know, it's just kind of like mixed signals where we weren't disrespecting. We just thought it was like a cute idea, and they're like, no way. So that was, it's stuff like that when they're really passionate too, and we're really passionate. It's kind of like, it's always gonna, you know, we can fight all we want, but they're the ones that can say no. Mm-hmm. So yeah,
has it gotten easier or harder to sort of maintain some creative leverage? The more and more you work with studios and licenses.
You know, I think they come to us because we're doing what we're doing. If they came to us and said, you know, basically like what you said, do your thing, but make it Shepherd Fairy. I mean, we just say no too. You know, we're just like, well, we don't want to do it. We've had really good luck though. I mean, it's kind of like what Justin said. We work with filmmakers. We work with, Guillermo del Toro. He's very specific on what he wants, and he's never had a problem. He's always been like, this is great. He wants to buy the originals and stuff. So I think we've been very lucky considering, you know, like this is a fairly new thing and people are nervous about it. And we've had lots of support and lots of people like really backing us. So it's been nice.
Cool. Yeah,
I know it sounds like we're bashing everything, but at the end of the day, we have awesome jobs, and yeah. I guess we're just explaining why there's not cooler stuff out there.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people are like, movie posters are like the worst they've ever been. It's all shit right now. But like I said, I think it's looking really promising. I mean, these studios are actually, they're doing it. Yeah, they're letting us do it. You know, and they're it's going to get better. I really do think it's going to like a new renaissance of, you know, kind of like really interesting posters. It's gonna come. You know, it'll happen. I promise. It'll be good.
I think we're in a really interesting period in poster design, where it's going to come around again, get more creative, more eye catching, more lurid. Like, I was walking around the convention center yesterday, just killing time, and there's this pavilion of posters, like 15, 20 posters, and right. It's just like, I want to see all these movies. What's it about? I don't know. I want to see the movie though. Awesome poster.
Yeah, and let's be honest here. Like, even in the 60s, there were shitty posters. You know, they're going to be a terrible drawn poster. So, yeah. I mean, there's always been bad posters. So it's not...
And there's a couple great posters from the past... Not a couple, but there's a lot of great posters from the 90s and from the 2000s. I have a lot of them in my collection.
Look at Die Hard. That's a face, and that's a great poster. You know, that's like Bruce Willis's face with an explosion out the side of his head. Like, that's amazing. I have that poster. It's great. So, yeah, I mean, like, don't worry about it. It's gonna be good. Everything's gonna be fine. Like, we're all gonna be all right. I promise. This is gonna be cool.
Well, I mean, to follow up on the idea that everything's gonna get better as far as poster design, there is an the idea of oversaturation. I saw that movie that you were in, the documentary that's playing here, just like being there. And one of the artists or a few artists made a really good point about the idea of oversaturating the market. Where these types, especially posters, like this is an example of a special like exhibition, I guess, in Montreal, and they're starting to push this sort of gig poster Mondo aesthetic. I wonder, will it get to a point where these posters are no longer special and sort of jump out from the crowd because there's so much bad stuff?
I don't know. I think about it. I mean, we've been compared to baseball cards and comic books and shit like that, and it is something to think about, Like, we try to be very responsible. The thing that killed comic books was they took advantage. We have people, like, saying, fuck you, Mondo, because we don't print more. And it's like, that's probably what happened to Marvel and Image and DC in the 90s when they were, like, doing... They're like, okay, well, we did Death of Superman. We have all these fans that came in, and it's crazy, and we need to take care of those fans. And then when those fans leave, you have this giant, you have all this shit there, and then there's no one there to buy it, so it killed the comic book industry. That's kind of, we've seen these trends before, and we want to, like, we're very conscious about it to where, you know, we could probably sell 10,000 posters or something crazy like that, but what happens when that's all gone? You know, there's it's irresponsible to the people that like it now to go for the quick buck and to do that. And then this is something special, and if we're, you know, like, I feel like we're responsible for, you know, partly responsible for making this thing keep going. And if we cash in now, it's just gonna fuck everything up. You know, I think it's more than just this cool thing. Like I said, I think it can really make posters interesting again. And to just, you know, people think we're like millionaires or some shit, and this is not true. You know, like, it's just we you know, we just don't want to ruin this thing. And I think we, you know, by doing that, like oversaturating, we could do that right now. It's just like, we won't do it. You know, like, it's something we're very passionate about, not doing, keeping it pure. Try, you know, as much as we can.
I think it's just going to bring about more interesting approaches and styles and artists. I don't think the gig poster world is oversaturated. I think it's growing. I mean, that has been growing for over a decade now, and it just brings out more interesting artists and more perspectives. I think that'll happen with this.
You know, I think if anything, if it comes oversaturated, it'll just make better art because people will think of how to make it better. You know, they'll challenge the artists to improve themselves and improve the industry. So it's just like, hopefully it's just keep getting more creative and more different and, you know, better.
Very cool. Well, I'm going to speed through some of these so we can get to the show and tell part, because I think this is the part that you guys will like the best. So, you know, before the panel, I asked each of you guys to sort of pick the favorite poster that you worked on. You know, I'd love to go into the story behind it and maybe even a bit of the process and creating sort of, you know, your favorite piece that you worked on. Akiko, you know, known for this Funny Games poster, sort of what can you tell us about it? There was an interesting sort of piece of trivia that you told me in regards to this seemingly photo-rendered poster.
Yeah, I think a lot of people can't tell whether it was a photo or an illustration, and I just wanted to quickly explain the process behind it. The client expressed certain interest in the specific scene of the movie, and we had no assets, basically. And basically, all we had was kind of a screener, and I had to take a screenshot this big, this teeny, teeny, tiny big, and they wanted me to somehow make a poster out of it. And in addition to making a poster out of it, they wanted other ideas made. So other designers were using photography that could be blown up more than this size, and I knew that if it wanted to have a chance in hell to even be presented, that little screenshot wasn't going to be usable. So this was the first time that I actually took my illustration skills and did digital illustration. And what I did, kind of what I do with my own freelance illustration work that's not movie poster related, I pulled up reference shots of Naomi Watts just so I can get a better feel of her likeness. And I used that as reference and digitally painted this. So throughout the process, it ended up being presented with a bunch of ideas, and it slowly got narrowed down to where this looked like it might actually be the poster. But the movie studio got a little worried that it was too plain and wasn't communicating horror enough, so they asked me to add a glove pulling her hair or put blood on her face.
I think in the interview I read about it, you said it was it would make it too movie postery.
Yes,
quote.
And that, you know, I have to deal with these issues every day, but this was where I put my foot down and I said, nope, I'm not doing it. If you guys want to just scratch this poster, I'd rather you get rid of it than completely butcher it. And I fought like crazy. I'm not a diva, but that's how I fought. And luckily, Michael Haneke himself chimed in and said, you know what, this is beautiful as is. Let's just go for it. And that's how it came out to be the way it did. Thank God for Michael. Yeah.
And then Justin, you know, in regards to this poster, which is probably one of my favorites of yours as well, when we were in the green room, or actually at the Mondo Gallery on Saturday, you kind of gave me a sort of peek behind your process, which I found really interesting, or at least the tools that you use to create, you know, what looks, you know, painterly.
It's digital. I do like little itty-bitty thumbnail sketches, but once it's approved, I do, it's all digital. With this particular poster, I'd done a lot, bunch from Mondo guys, so getting more used to the process and working with them. And when they asked me to do The Burning, I'm like, oh, of course, I do The Burning. I love that movie. So I watched it a bunch of times just to refresh myself and realized it wasn't that good of a movie. You know, when you're a kid, you think it's all good, but it's not really good. But I really wanted to make it look like something that came from the era of like the slasher boom in the 80s and all those horror posters from that era and before and after. They promised a movie, the poster promised better than the movie really was. Because in the movie, you don't really see Cropsey very well. He's obscured. There's not a lot of gore. So I just really wanted to make it look like it would have came out in the era. The colors are really, really saturated.
How many comps do you go through before you get to, you know, sort of this?
That's my first idea, actually. I try to do like 15 ideas just to get the juices flowing. But sometimes just the first idea is like, that's the one.
Very cool. And then this one, Mr. Mondo, took me a while to get from you. But yeah, talk a little bit about this piece and why you think this is your favorite piece to come out of Mondo.
Oh man, it's just so beautiful. Like everyone thinks I always have like our stuff framed everywhere, and this is like one of the only ones I have done. You know, it's just I guess because I have it framed, it's the one I wanted more out of any of them up on my wall. So I guess this technically is my favorite poster that we've done. So I don't know. It was kind of the way it came about too. Like the text is not by the same guy. Like the Dracula, and then the bottom right hand corner, the Bela Lugosi, like the credit block, that was all added in later. We just got that, like that really, like, you know, the flowery image of the woman from Vanya from Russia, and I was just like, man, this is. We saw him on a blog, and he does like really crazy pen and ink stuff. And we bought his book, and we're just like, "Oh my god, this guy's nuts!" And I like it because it's not a typical Dracula poster. It doesn't have Bela Lugosi on it. There's not, you know, it's not like, you know, like the whole like the cliche Dracula thing. Like it's really this is one of those things that, you know, I guess it's advertising Dracula, but it is just totally on its own. It's like it's a piece of art. Like this could. You know, this could be like that image, you know, without the Dracula or whatever, even with it, really could hang in, you know, some like high level art gallery, you know what I mean? And people would be like, oh, this is interesting. And stroke their chin and like talk about why it's important or something, you know? I mean, I really didn't think it was like, you know, if this wasn't put out by us for like $50 or something, it could be like in this giant gallery and people would be like, oh shit, this is crazy. So yeah, it is my favorite.
Cool. And then, you know, Sam, this is the one that you picked, and what I found most interesting about this out of all the others is that this is actually a personal project, is that right? Or is this...
Yeah, well, it was just the idea I had, and then I put down... this is actually a great example of something that I did on my own that the powers that be found out about, and it might be used for something, which is nice when that happens. But it was... This is, like, the quickest time between just the idea in your head and putting it down and, like... Oh, I don't think I need to do anything with that because I kind of like it as is. You know, it's easy to overthink an idea and work on it too much. But I'm proud of this because it's so hard to... My goal is to try to, if I can, ideally, encapsulate a film with an image that just represents the film. It's so often like... I realize how often you have to put a person in a poster. Almost every poster you see, there's a human face or a human body or a human hand. So I always try to see how can I represent this movie in a way that's different? And the idea came to me, I did it. I was like, oh, it looks cool. And that's always kind of my first priority, is it looks cool. It looks pretty. I like the colors. And then I realized, oh, it actually kind of works perfectly because the white space is like the time remaining before sunrise, and here the white space is the time remaining before sunset, and you know, something within me kind of put that down without me thinking through it, and it's just really nice when that happens.
And you document a lot of your processes on your personal site, on your blog. Does that help you in the process?
Yeah, I think I wanted to do that for a while, because I kind of thrive off of people's feedback and enthusiasm. Sometimes I look back at the process and I'm like, oh, I probably shouldn't have put that out into the world because that's obviously unfinished. I like put a lot of unfinished stuff out there. But, you know, I think it's worth it because it helps me kind of think through what happened and kind of people find it interesting to see the process. So I think there's value in that.
And, you know, the sort of flip side to this, to get a little bit more, you know, to get your guys' taste, I guess, as far as posters that you didn't work on, you know, that's exactly what I asked you guys to do. And we'll start with you, Justin. This is your favorite poster you haven't worked on. Can you tell us a little bit about
it? Favorite poster today I haven't worked on. It changes daily. I love a million posters, but I chose this one just because I love Graham Humphreys. He's my absolute favorite poster artist. He's still working today, actually. He just did a poster for Hammer for Aluminum Black. But I chose this poster because just everything about it is just so tight. Like, there's a picture, there's this very ethereal, dreamlike, painterly quality to it that evokes the dream aspect of the movie. You have a face of Nancy front and center, and she's dreaming, and the buildings are almost becoming the blanket she's holding. Freddy, who at this point wasn't Freddy we all know and love now, who's a goofy killer, he was still scary and unknown, so they have the iconic glove and him silhouetted behind her, almost coming from her dreams. And the cherry on top for me is how every light in the house is on, because no one wants to go to sleep. So it draws you in right away from being a great illustration. And then the more you look at it, the more it tells you about the movie itself, which is what a good poster should really do. Mm-hmm. And it tells so much of a story just by being there.
That's cool. I like the off-center tagline, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then... Here's yours, Sam. The Mexico, you know, style.
Yeah, Cuban poster, which was like kind of my entry into poster love, was the Cuban posters of the 60s and 70s. I don't know. I have too many favorite posters, but this was like one of the first ones that was like, holy shit, that makes me want to make posters. I love how it brings to the foreground the printing process. I'm really inspired by the printing process. The printers I know, the gig poster movement that's happened over the past 15 years. And Mondo obviously like celebrates this. I like when a poster can bring you in to the process. And you see how this was done, you know. You see how that was made. And it's just an abstract representation of the film. It's very eye-catching, it's very colorful, very iconic. And I just saw that, and I was like, that's so cool. The U.S. poster is actually also really minimalistic and beautiful, a close-up of a face, but in a totally different style. But I think that one looks great.
Very cool. And Akiko, you have an interesting thing behind this in that it's a great example, as you said in the email when you sent it to me, of you liking the poster better than the film.
Yeah, and no disrespect to the movie. I think it's just because I'm a girl that I don't think I could sit through it more than once. But I just love this poster. I mean, it's my boyfriend's poster, and it's about 6 feet wide, and it's in our living room, and it's absolutely gorgeous. You have it? Great. I just love it because it's yeah, like you said, it's a perfect example of me loving the poster more than the movie.
Does that happen a lot?
For me, sometimes, definitely. I mean, I actually have a lot of people say they love the Funny Games poster, but they've never seen it either. So, you know, I'm not alone in that. But I love this because there's not a big Marlon Brando head, and it's just random that this guy's surfing. I mean, I know there's a small scene in the movie, but that they chose that image to be the main poster. And I think Japanese posters in general have this beautiful grace to them, and to not state the obvious concept of a film, which for me I find very intriguing.
And then Mr. Mondo, this was an interesting pick. When you sent it to me, you said it was the most irresponsible thing a studio has ever put out for a movie.
This goes against everything all of you guys just said. It's like totally the opposite of everything. No one's seen this bullshit. Like, it's amazing. So I was digging through a bunch of posters yesterday I had, and I'm a print collector. I collect 35mm film, like the actual movies. And I went through a phase where I was like, all right, if I get Alligator, I need to get every kind of advertising material for it ever. So I was really like hunting down. I was getting the German poster. I was getting the American poster and all the shit. And I even bought like they had a really like, so this is the Jaws ripoff. And you know, remember the Jaws game had the shark with the mouth and put stuff in and it clamps down. They actually went as far to make an alligator like that. So it's like chomping your hand, and got pulled off the marquee. So it was like biting kids' hands, and they're crying. So this poster is, I think it's the UK quad or something like that. And if you read the tagline, a frightening movie with a sense of fun, and this is not that. Like this movie, this is one of the examples of. It's almost like Polish in the fact that it's just a weird image. It's almost like the airplane from Airplane. You know, it's all like twisted up in a knot. this does not represent the movie at all. I just thought it was so funny. It makes it look like a kid, like a fun, goofy kids film. And in the movie, kids are getting killed by the alligator. So, like, I would have loved to have walked in thinking it's going to be some, like, fun, like, Disney thing. And
what's
then
the A at the end of the...
It's a rating.
It's a rating, okay. I guess, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I just think it's amazing. It's an amazing, it's an amazing image, too. I like it a lot, so.
It's pretty rad. So I think we have a few minutes for questions for the panelists. Does anyone have a question? Make sure it is a question, please.
Any cues?
Yeah. Can we get a mic over here?
Show, who's close?
Thank you.
I think you guys touched on it a little earlier with the posters, that a lot of the European posters, I fell in love with Polish film posters and European. They tell a story. They bring the essence of the film into the poster, but I feel like with Hollywood movies, they're more about putting heads on posters. And it's understandable because they spend $100 million on Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie, and they want those actors, actresses to sell the movie.
At times they have to as well, contractually. Like some of the bigger stars in their contracts will say, my head must be bigger than anybody else's.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
It depends on who they are, really. Like, so sometimes right out of the gate, your hands are, rather what you can do is limited.
Definitely. And in addition to that, I think American advertising as a whole tends to be more watered down. And if you see more European advertising, you actually have to think for yourself for a few seconds before you figure out what the ad is. So I think it's just, it's the difference in cultures, too.
Mm-hmm. I think the Polish posters sometimes play on that. First of all, sometimes they do use a head photo in a cool way. But a lot of times, especially in Polish posters, for some reason, you see the bust, and then the head is like something else. So it's an interesting inversion of that.
All right, do we have another question? Here in the back with the hat.
Just sort of an agree or disagree. So everything I'm hearing about the creation, working with the studios, Hollywood posters, sounds almost exactly like what the writers go through and often what the directors go through. And it sort of sounds like your industry somehow, like the entire film industry is one great big monster, and all the little pieces of it all have to kowtow to making dollars, pleasing Peoria, and all of that, so that all your art and your creativeness is kind of, well, can sort of be lost in the mix, the advertising mix, and be stomped on along with the writers.
It's like it's like a relationship. It's like a personal relationship. You know, two people probably won't agree every time on where they're going to go eat dinner, but they're going to eat. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's I don't know. Yeah, I mean, yes, it's difficult sometimes, but you know, at least for us, it's been cool. You know, like it's been really fun, and you know, like I think we talked about it before. Like, it's just, you know, like you said, like good days, bad days. You know what I mean? So this is like anything else. You know,
like sometimes you think a client will be bad, you send them a few ideas, and they love the first idea you have, and you're singing the whole time. Every client's different. Every job's different. You can't. Just because you have one bad job, you can't expect every job to be bad forever, because it's just that client, that job. You know.
Question up here. I think this will be the last one, unfortunately.
Sam already answered this question inadvertently, but I'm curious, what was the moment in your life when you decided, I love movie posters, and hey, this is what I want to do?
I wanted to be an editor on a movie. I wanted to be a special effects artist, and I wanted to work at Marvel and draw comics, and be in the bullpen. And I guess running Mondo is kind of like the combination of all three of those things, because I wasn't talented enough to do any of those specific things. So now I can kind of be like, hey, Marvel, I want to work with you, and hey, Warner Brothers, I want to work with you guys. You're cool. So yeah, it's like I don't think I was ever like specifically in my life like I want to do this one thing. It just kind of like gelled and mushed into what it is now. It wasn't specifically movie posters necessarily.
I think for me, I was doing movie posters for a while, hoping it was just going to be a temporary job. And when people asked me what I did, I always said, I'm an illustrator and I do movie posters. But I think after Funny Games and after a few other of my posters got picked and people started understanding what type of work I did and actually started appreciating it, I was finally, you know, able to admit that I did it. So think Fighting Games was the first of that.
Sam?
Well, yeah, actually, when I was a kid, would make movie posters, too, with all the movies I loved, like Batman and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, when I was, like, 10 years old. I would, like, do my own versions of those movies with my puppets and make my own posters, like Bear Man and La La Scissorhands and
I
stuff
can't wait
like
for the coffee table book.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a couple of them hanging up.
For me, it started at a young age. We had a Canadian video store called Jumbo Video. And they had a big main room for all of the comedies, dramas, actions. But they had this kind of closet tucked off to the side, and most of them for horror films and horror thriller. And it wasn't just a room. It was a room that was dressed up to be a dungeon. Like black walls, painted brick, skeletons, and spooky stuff. So as a kid, my dad would take me to the video store. He'd get the movies for the family, and I'd run off to the dungeon room and just like pore over these covers. And they're all beautifully illustrated, and it's really interesting. So I fell in love with film art from a very young age, and then posters came around, and I loved those. I've always been an artist, so I kind of see natural. I love poster art. I'm an artist. Let's make posters.
All right. Well, as we wrap this up, let's let people know where they can find your work. Start with you, Justin.
You can find the company website at famcitycreative.com. One word.
Samsmith.net.
Akikomatic.com.
Mondotees.com.
Cool. Well, give a round of applause, guys, for this great panel. Appreciate it.
Thank you.